Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 85. And this week we are going to talk about shooting fundamentals and our favorite shooting drills with my co-host, Mr. Tony D. Viss. Mr. Viss, how are things with you today, my friend?
It is beautiful, beautiful weather. We're probably in that 70, 75 degree area. I mean, it's almost perfect. Got outside for a little soccer practice tonight, so doing really, really well. How are you?
Good. I got home and went on about a two plus mile walk, and then mowed, and then cooked supper. And then I'm going to catch a flight to the Middle East to solve the crisis. You know, I'm just busy with everything, you know, so I say that jokingly. I'm not really doing that. So, it's been a busy day, and now we're chatting here. We're chatting it up. We're going to talk about fundamentals of shooting and some shooting drills. But before we do that, Mr. Viss, episode 85, I have I've got two wide receivers, I've got two tight ends, and I have a defensive lineman, and then another obscure basketball number 85.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I'll be lucky to bat under 500 on this one. Okay. Let's go.
That'll still put you in the Hall of Fame, though.
Sweet. Yeah. George Kittle?
George Kittle, former Iowa Hawkeye. George Kittle.
How about Vernon Davis?
Vernon Davis. Yes, the former two San Francisco 49er tight ends. My wife and I watched, we were at home on a Friday night about a month ago, and we were looking for a movie to watch, and we saw something on Hulu or Netflix or something like that, and it was called The Ritual Killer, and one of the stars of the movie was Vernon Davis.
Wow, I did not know he dabbled in the theater.
Well, after watching that, he should not do that anymore.
Okay. Better football player.
It was so bad. I mean, the premise wasn't bad, but the acting and the storyline and just like, oh, jeez. It was a film that should not have seen the light of day. It had Morgan Freeman in it too, you know, and like, wow. Oh, Morgan Freeman, this will be pretty good, you know, and not even Morgan Freeman could help this one out.
So did you say two or three tight ends?
Just those were the two. So I got
right,
two wide receivers.
Two wide receivers.
Yeah.
Greg Jennings.
No, I didn't have him on the list.
Okay.
Both of them made their heyday in the 80s when we were kids.
Andre Bad Noon Rising.
Nope.
80s receivers.
One in the AFC, one in the NFC. They actually played against each other in a Super Bowl, I believe. Yes. Stumped?
I am stumped.
All right. Super Bowl, I believe it was 17. 17 or, yeah, 17. No, whatever. I don't know. Art Monk.
Oh, yeah.
And Mark Super Duper.
Super Duper. I should have went back to the Marks. We had Clayton not that long ago.
Yep. So we had that. And then you got a defensive lineman.
85 D line.
Played in a Super Bowl with the Los Angeles Rams. His last name is the same name as a bad Rob Lowe movie where he plays a hockey player.
I think I've seen that movie.
Did you throw that in the VCR about 1986?
I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Los Angeles Ram, 85, Youngblood.
Jack Youngblood is it. Yes, and it counts.
And then we're off to a basketball player?
Random basketball player. You'll never get it, so I'll tell you.
Okay, thank you.
For the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2011 and the New York Knicks in 2012, It was Baron Davis that wore number 85.
Oh, I would have never got that. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, well, that's why I figured you would have never got it. So, yeah, there you have it. Numbers, famous numbers 85 here. So, Tony, episode 85 here, the fundamentals of shooting and shooting drills. We're going to split this into two parts here. Let's just talk about the fundamentals of shooting to get started here. I'll give you the floor first, my friend.
You know, I think a lot of times when we take a look at shooting, we really want to talk about the upper body. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I think that's so super important is the lower body in your shot. And if you go through and take a look at why most shots are missed, it's due to not being in balance. And when you're not in balance, that obviously falls more so on your lower body. And a big part of that is how far apart your feet are. You know, are you too narrow? Are you too wide? You know, you want to make sure they're about shoulder width apart. Your shooting foot, you want it to be slightly ahead of your non-shooting foot. And obviously, if you take a look at a few other things as well, your knees being bent and being in an athletic stance is so super important there as well. And so that's where I would kind of start at in terms of like fundamentals, just making sure that, you know, you're in balance. You have, you know, where you can't get too narrow and get bumped out of balance. You know, with your feet, you're going to end up, whether it's off the catch, whether it's off the bounce, with your shooting foot slightly ahead of your non-shooting foot. And again, you always want to make sure in a bent knee athletic position. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I would start things at as far as the fundamentals go. And then as we move up the body, one of the things we talk a little bit about is hand placement. Yep. And, you know, one of the big things on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, last week was Doug Gottlieb kind of going after Caitlin Clark and her shooting form a little bit. And when you take a look at some of the things that Doug was bringing up is her thumbing the ball. And that's quite a common mistake with shooters at times, is the fact that they take that offhand and they'll kind of twist that thumb a little bit and give a little bit of a side spin. And so one of the things, again, probably a bad analogy on my part, is just talking about that non-shooting hand. We call it the balance hand. Mm-hmm. We compare it to a ping pong paddle, where you want it to be flat and it's just there for balance. As you take the ball up into your shot, your guide hand, your balance hand, is going to come off the ball and it's going to turn into that one hand shot. And we talk a lot about making sure that your elbow is under the ball. And then as you begin to extend up, the other side of your elbow needs to be above your eyebrow to make sure that you're getting good arc on the ball. You know, they've studied it and they talk a lot about the fact that, hey, rim's obviously 10 feet high. You want to shoot the ball 11 and a half feet on average at its apex as it comes down to go through the net. And you hear different ones that'll talk too about aim at the same thing every time. So if you're aiming at the back of the rim, aim at the back rim, aim at the front of the rim, aim at the front of the rim. But make sure you are consistent in what your target is each and every time. And then the other thing that we talk a little bit about as well is our fingers. And we call the index and the middle finger our guide fingers. Where they go is where the ball is going to go. And so, you know, you want to make sure those are going towards your target and you hold that follow through so you get some good backspin on it. So as it hits the rim, it deadens it and you get a chance to get the shooter's touch, that shooter's bounce, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so those are kind of some of the keys that we really emphasize a lot in terms of shooting. And the big thing, Marty, to be honest with you, you know, would I say that's the correct way? Yeah, I'd say that's the correct way. Would I say it's the only way? Absolutely not. Some of the best shooters in the world and some of the best shooters that I've coached, they have a flaw at times, whether it's the elbow out, elbow in, whether it's whatever, but they rep it so doggone much that it just becomes second nature and they're able to work around that shot flaw, if you will, and be able to shoot the ball very accurately.
Yeah. Yeah, I think kind of one of the things that popped into my head when you were talking there, and you were talking about like Caitlin Clark, I thought I saw something about Kyrie getting his thumb in there a little bit too. But if you got a kid that's shooting it well, but might have a technical thing or two that needs to be fixed, don't mess with it. I think that's one of the number one things. I think we can overcoach this to a degree. If a player is comfortable, if the ball's going in the basket, it's just kind of like a baseball player with their batting stance. And, you know, when we were kids, you had everything from Julio Franco to Willie McGee to
Gary Sheffield, baby.
Gary Sheffield, Eric Davis, you know, all of these just all over the place batting stances. But they were great hitters, so don't mess with it. And I think sometimes we can be so obsessed with, well, it's not technically right, it's not this, it's not that, that no, just let them be. Just let them be and have them let it fly. I think that's a really important thing. I had written down, Tony, and you kind of hit a lot of it there, the beef, you know, balance, mm-hmm. eyes, elbow, follow through, that type of thing. And that's stuff that we've talked about. Just a couple of things. You were talking about the offhand placement. And one of the things that I would preach to our shooters, or we would talk about, is have your thumbs make that T there.
Mm-hmm.
The left thumb and the right thumb make that T, and you're going to be in pretty good shape if that's where it is. And then on that release, and this was a Kobe Bryant thing, he had, and I think he picked it up from Chuck Person, the rifleman, who was the answer to our trivia question last week. The middle, you were talking about the index finger and the middle finger being your guide fingers coming off your hand, but also Kobe would talk about having him have that middle finger be the last finger coming off the ball, and making sure that he tried to feel that as much as possible, and getting that spin and that rotation on it. One of the big things that we would preach, that I would preach to our kids, is really kind of in that same vein, snapping off that follow through. I mean, we really emphasize that snap and hold it hard and hold that follow through for at least 1 second. But in a perfect world, hold that follow through till the ball hits the rim.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get that snap, get that follow through, and hold it for 1 second, and bring that through. Now, I know there's a thing, in our neck of the woods over here on this side of the river, Keisei Tominaga, who is an unbelievable shooter, obviously,
mm-hmm.
But he did a lot of the snap and bring it right back, and he didn't. There would be times where he didn't hold his follow through a lot, but again, don't mess with it. You know, if it's going in, if he's shooting it as well as he shoots it, then don't mess with it. And so, kind of building on a couple of things that you had talked about there, Tony. Those were a couple other things I wanted to talk about with the end of the shot there. I mean, anything there at all that you wanted to build on with that?
The only other thing I would go, like with your jump shot, one of the things we talk about is going straight up and straight down.
Yep.
You know, you want to take off and kind of land in that same spot. Now, don't get me wrong, you take a look at some of the great shooters, you know, and they do the fadeaway, whether it's Jordan or Ant or whoever, Kevin Durant, you know, but a lot of times, you know, we're not coaching those guys and gals. And so you want to make sure that you're really keeping it kind of in that vein. Now, if they want to put a lot of time in and add that to the repertoire, fantastic. But, you know, when you're catching it, just make sure straight up, straight down. And footwork, super, super important. Like, we rep a lot, like when you're going towards the basket, receiving a pass, we talk about the 1-2 step. When you're making a cut, you know, coming off a cut, we talk a lot about inside pivot. And so we do a lot of drills that emphasize those things. But, you know, just kind of footwork and then straight up, straight down. And then make sure, again, eye on that target, you know, hold that follow through, like you said, in a perfect world until it hits the rim.
Yeah. We really addressed, and again, great players are great players. You know, Anthony Edwards has, you know, he's doing things right now that just great players do. But, you know, he has that athletic ability. Most people don't have that. We really emphasize getting your shoulders forward, moving your shoulders into your shot, and you're coaching guys now, so they've got more upper body strength, and so they can kind of shoot those fadeaways stereotypically a little bit easier than the girls can. But for us, we really emphasize getting those shoulders forward, getting, and you talked about balance and getting squared up, but we really emphasize moving those shoulders forward, and you know, it helped. I think it helped our percentages doing that. Now, and what we're also working on is getting paint touches, kicking it out, relocating, and that kind of brings me to a couple of other things. We spent a lot of time, and we'll talk about it when we get into our drills here in the next segment, but we spent a lot of time when we're talking about the fundamentals of shooting, kind of branching out from that, getting shot ready as a shooter. And we would just preach, shot ready, get shot ready. And we tried to speed up our kids' delivery with getting low, getting those hands up. And then, of course, that also comes with the passer. And the passer, hey, you got to make it on time, on target. On time, on target, consistently, consistently, consistently. And so we tried to tie that in as well. And I think as you branch out from like your form shooting, your fundamental shooting, as you take those next steps, those are things that great shooters do, is they are shot ready and their teammates hit them with their pass on time and on target.
And, you know, Marty, you know this, as you go up levels, whether it's middle school to, you know, freshman or JV or varsity or whatever, the amount of time that you have to get your shot off, it shortens. And yeah. So you've got to be shot ready. And it's super, super important on that pass too. I mean, you can have a great shooter, but if you can't hit them on time, on target, it really doesn't matter how great of a shooter they are. They're not going to get that shot off. You've got to make sure that you're really taking pride in that pass and setting your teammate up to be successful.
A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding, with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece, with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. What else you got on the fundamentals of shooting, Tony?
You know, in terms of like the fundamentals of shooting, the thing that's so super important there as well is just confidence. You know, it's one of those things, you know, if you think you can, you're probably right. If you think you can't, you're definitely right. And one of the things you go back to as far as the whole shooting thing goes is just that confidence. And when they're going through some of those issues, you go back to where you started, which is fundamentals. And then as they maybe go through those things, and I know earlier you kind of talked about a little bit like baseball swings. I think another area that's also comparable there too would be putting on the golf green. Uh-huh. And one of the things I think that is so, so detrimental when somebody's going through that slump, if you will, is to, you know, get on them. You know, you don't do that with somebody trying to make a 6-foot putt. Why are you on it? A shooter? Yeah. And as a coach, you know, we talk about the fact, as long as you take good shots, we're going to support you. Mm-hmm. And that's so super important to know. They have a green light. They can take good shots. And as long as they're taking good shots within the flow of the offense, you're going to support them. And I think that's so super important, because confidence is a funny thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, it goes back to that can and can't thing. If you think you can, you're probably right. If you think you can't, you're definitely right. And so confidence is just super important.
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head there, Tony. If they think they can do it, they're going to do it. And you have to, with shooting, you have to accept that. Even the best shooters, the greatest shooters, don't have it every night. It is what it is. And that's, you know, more big picture team development. But as long as kids were taking good shots, I didn't have too many times. I can think of a couple of times where I got on a kid for taking a bad shot, you know, based on time and score and situation and things like that. And it turned out, I'll be honest with you, it was my fault. I kind of took some confidence away from a couple of kids, you know, and just messed that part of it up, you know. But I agree with you that you've got to stay with your kids through thick and thin. You've got to keep building them up. We would really praise our kids with their shooting and shooting drills and practice. And we were constantly calling out names. And one thing we would say a lot of, Tony, or I would say a lot of, was, hey, good miss, Tony. If we're going to miss, that's the way we want to miss right there. And ours was always long. If you miss long with good lift, good arch, then don't worry about it. It's going to go in. If you leave it short, it's not an ideal miss, but it's not bad. But then when you start getting right and left, that's when you start getting into your fundamentals of shooting. But we would really, and I encourage coaches to do this. You know, if kids are missing long and you've got good lift on your shots, just keep praising them. And hey, great miss. I believe that's a positive phrase, because your kids know, hey, I know I'm gonna, you're not obviously not gonna make every shot unless you're Tony Viss, you know. When they miss, you praise if they're doing it the way that you've asked them to do it. So
100%, and you know, it's one of those things too where, you know, I think as a coach, if you can empower them with good fundamentals, and they're going to be their own best shooting coach. Mm-hmm. And so if you can kind of talk them through the psychology, you build them up, you help them gain confidence, you're going to empower them. And when they miss, like I said, they can be their own best. Oh, I missed that short. I got to use my legs more next time. And then the other thing that you'll see as well, you know, kind of along those same lines, is if they're a 50% shooter and they miss one, what should the next mentality be? It's in.
Yeah,
I missed the last one. I'm 50% shooter. This one's in. And again, just kind of staying in that confidence theme.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing I would say, they're not all going in, but the next one is. And I think you have to try and build in that personality to your players. They're not all going in, but the next one is. So I've got a couple more things on shooting fundamentals, Tony. What do you got?
I've got one more.
Okay, what do you got?
The thing I would go with is, I think like with anything, charting it is super important.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of going back through, you know, with just different shots that you want them working on. So they have a program they're working. They're keeping track of makes and misses, because if you're going to do it, if you're going to do something, you want to make sure you put your best forward. And being able to chart that way, as they're putting time in, oh, man. You know, when I first started off, I was shooting like 45% from, you know, 18 feet. It's now up over 50%. And they can see that. And you put goals for them. You know, hey, by the end of the summer, you know, I want you from uncontested from 18 feet, knocking down 70%. 3-point line, I want you knocking down 50%+ from three uncontested, you know, when you're just kind of shooting around. And you can work on adding other things off the bounce and, you know, different things like that. But give them a program and have them chart that. And I think that's so very, very important as well, because that way they can see that work is paying off.
Did you ever see Mike Nabor's green light, yellow light, red light stuff?
I think I've seen something with it, because we did some stuff with that with our kids, that if they did kind of what you're talking about, they would have the green light from pretty much anywhere. And yeah. So we did have that in, and we would work on that, like, you know, open gym type stuff where they could get that green light, yellow light, red light. If that's what you're, yeah. I think I'm on the same page there.
Yeah, basically, and I'm going by memory here, but you popped it into my head when you talked about that. You know, you would try to qualify for it once a week, mm-hmm. or you do, I guess, you know, Coach Nabor's still coaching. Sorry, Coach. You try to qualify once a week, you know, here's five drills. And if you qualify in three of these five drills, then you get the green light. If you make it in two of the five drills or whatever it was. And I'm sure if you want, it doesn't take much to find it if you want to Google it or whatever, but
yeah.
that's something that also will, you could, it's chartable. It also helps with your team because, you know, it makes your kids think about their shot selection once you get into competitions and things like that. But it also gives them a goal to reach that is attainable, you know, for your players as well. So, I like the charting. We would do that in the summer. We would chart total number of shots. And again, no system is a perfect system unless you're there with an abacus or whatever, and you're counting every single shot. But I think it's good to chart shots in the off season, in the improvement season, to have some sort of system. I wholeheartedly agree with you there, Tony, in that regard. So, we would talk, and not to sound too new age, because I'm not a firm believer in just threes, frees, and layups, you know. But we would try to tell our kids, unless you've really worked on your game, minimize your shots that you're taking off the bounce, especially in our situation where we didn't have a shot clock, you know, so we didn't have to force a shot to get a shot up at the end of the shot clock or whatever it may be. But you know, I did some studying in my sabbatical about shooting off the dribble, and the shooting percentage for NBA players who dribble more than twice, at the time it was something like 22 or 23%. You know, so why, as high school players, would we spend a ton of time making a bunch of moves off the bounce and doing this and that when the best players in the world, if they dribble more than twice, are making the shot less than one out of four times? Now, and again, we weren't totally three-point shooting team. It was take a good shot for you. And so if you're a 15-foot shooter, well, then you're a 15-foot shooter. Don't shoot a three just because we say, well, it should be a three-point shot because that's what the analytics say. And that's kind of what Steve Kerr did with the Warriors. You know, other than Clay and Curry, everybody else was kind of more mid-range and doing that type of thing. And that's what they emphasized, was just taking good shots and getting your shoulders forward there. So, so yeah, that type of thing is another thing. Is we as I got older, we really minimized how much time we spent working on shot fake, one hard dribble, pull up J, either going right or left, because again, the analytics has shown that that's not as nearly efficient shot as what one would think it is. So that's another thing we did, Tony.
And I think that's important, you know, because it's like anything. You want to make sure you play to your strength and you're taking shots that you have a much higher percentage of making. I mean, it's not rocket science as a coach. If you take high percentage shots, you're going to score more points. If you score more points, your chances of winning go up.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else on fundamentals, Tony?
I am out on that one.
Okay. So $64,000 question. Where are you at in your program with trainers?
You know, I think it's one of those things as far as trainers go. It's just a part of the world that we live in today. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just something that you deal with. Now, am I going to push my guys toward trainers? No. But if they're going to a trainer, like they're finding, you know, college age guys or college graduates that are trying to play overseas or whatever, and they want to work out with them and, you know, different things like that, and they're getting a ball in their hand and stuff, I'm okay with it. It's what it is today. But am I pushing my guys to go to a trainer? No. I think a lot of times we can give them what they need to work on, and if they follow that, they'll be in good shape. They don't necessarily need to go elsewhere, but if it's something that they like, they enjoy, and it's helping them get better, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. I think one of the hardest things that I struggled with was finding the time, in this sense, of finding the time to work with the players in the way that I would want to. So if I have a big sit-down session with Tony for 45 minutes on shooting fundamentals, I always felt like, as a head coach, well, then I would have to do that for 14 other kids, you know, and I think it's hard to find that time to really teach shooting in the way that we would really like to. Now, if I were ever to get back into it, I interviewed a guy named Steve Klein from Bellevue West. Klein, I'm giving you credit for this here. If I ever got back into it again, I think one of the things that I would do differently is I would start out every practice with an organized 10-minute session every single day on shooting form, and we would do that. What we did do, and it worked out okay, we would say, okay, here's your shooting routine that you need to do before every practice, and we would let the kids do that. And part of that was kind of their downtime of the transition from the school day into practice and giving them some downtime. If I ever got back into it again, I think what I would do is I would do that Steve Klein, we're just going to do 10 minutes of form shooting, and we're going to do this this way. And I think that would be one major change that I would make. So, but that's kind of where I'm at there. So, anything else on that?
We vary what we do for our warm-ups. Sometimes we'll do like dynamic stretching and form running. Other times we'll do whatever. But one of the things that John does quite a bit, and we don't do this as often as he does, but we'll start off form shooting. We'll give them 2-3 minutes. We'll go from form shooting into partner shooting. We'll go from partner shooting into like some footwork stuff, like drop step, turn middle step through type thing. We'll do inside pivots, and just a variety of things that we do. And it would take normally about 10, 12 minutes. And that's how he pretty much starts almost every single one of his practices. And obviously it's done okay with how he's done it.
Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Yeah. I think he's done all right.
He's done okay.
Yeah, done okay. So, all right, Tony. Favorite shooting drills. I've got 5. I asked you to do 5. We each got. Hopefully, we got 5. I know I have 5. Did you uphold your end of the bargain here?
I can easily come up with 5. I probably could have went more than that.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and start this one here. Okay. This is not necessarily a shooting drill, but it is a variety. It's my favorite way to shoot in practice, and it's rebounder, passer, shooter. Just because I like players having to read the ball coming off the rim as the rebounder. You're getting passing in all the way around. Your shooters have to get shot ready. Your passers have to hit them on time, on target. And there's a million different variations that you can do of rebounder, passer, shooter. If folks are interested, I've got a list of 25 of them probably that I'm willing to share that we've done over the years. And that's one of my favorites, is just anything rebounder, passer, shooter, just because it's got everything going, and you can do a lot of, like I said, there's so many different things that you can do with it. That's why it's one of my favorites.
I think anytime you can throw in competition with a shooting drill, it makes it a lot better, and there's all kinds of them. So what I'm going to kind of do, rather than list every single shooting drill I know, is I'm just going to go through what we do that are my 5 favorite competition shooting drills.
Sure.
And so I'll just share those with you. And so we do what we call full court 21. And so we usually get the guys about 18 feet out. Your first shot is going to be shoot it from there. If you make it, you get 2 points. And then wherever you get the rebound at, you can have one dribble, you get a second point, and then you have to fly down to the other end of the floor and shoot it from basically 18 feet, get a rebound, one dribble, put that in. And you're trying to play to 21, and you have 3 teams going at the same time. And that one I like a lot because it's working a lot of different things. Number one, I know the mid-range is not a popular shot, but you're working on that. You're working on following your shot, grabbing the rebound and go. And then you have to work on your conditioning to get the other end, chop your feet and be able to pull up and shoot an 18-foot jumper off the bounce. And then, so I just really like that one a lot. And then the next one, as you're done, you pass the ball back down to the line. So now, like you're saying, the passer has to give them a good pass, because we talked earlier about the impact of the good pass and the ball going in the basket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everything, almost every shooting drill that we did had some sort of time and competition component to it. We very rarely did a shooting drill that was not, okay, this team versus this team versus this team, or you have this amount of time to get this many makes, or, you know, whatever the point system was. So I definitely agree with you there, Tony. So another one of my favorites was two ball, three shooter drill. And so you're getting a lot of movement. So like one that you could do is we're going to go 2 minutes and every shot is catch and shoot from 15 to 21 feet, wherever you're at. And every make is worth 1 point. Okay. And we're going to do that for 2 minutes. And then the next 2 minutes, it's going to be, now you got to catch it at the 3-point line every time. Shot fake, one hard dribble, direct drive. We would say we want to make 20 feet, 12 feet off the bounce and do that for 2 minutes. And then for two more minutes, shot fake, same thing, only we're going left with our left hand here, and you're totaling up, or, you know, stuff like that. But again, it's constant movement. You've got to relocate. You've got to think. You've got to communicate. You've got to concentrate. You've got to stay organized. And you got to make some shots here at the end of it. So two ball, three shooters, another one of my favorites.
One that we like to do a lot is full court three-man weave shooting. And so what happens on that, you make two passes. You go down the court doing three-man weave. Somebody's going to take the layup. The other two guys are going to shoot, you know, a jump shot. Now, what we have to figure out on this is we do throw some extra things in there. We put time up on the clock, and they have to get a certain amount of makes and points before the time goes off the clock. Now, we put a few other things in there as well. If you pull up from three and you knock down a three, rather than getting 1 point for your make, you get 2 points. Mm-hmm. If all three guys make their shot, you get an additional point. And okay, so we throw that in there. We usually put up, I'm trying to remember the exact amount of time that we do on this. And I think we start off with a little bit more, and then we work it down as we go through the year. And one of the things that we might try to do by the end of the year is knock that thing down to about three and a half minutes, and you have to get over 100 points on that one. And mm-hmm. So that's one that we like to do as well. And again, passing, communication, you're working on conditioning as you're running down the floor, and different things like that. And so it's one where I think if you can put a bunch of different skills in your routine and work on more than just form shooting, I think that goes a long way as well.
Gotcha. One of our favorites that we use to work on our motion principles, and I hope I'm able to explain this well enough on the podcast here, but if folks want to know this one, we called it three line shooting. And so we had three offensive lines. We would start one line in a corner. So let's say the ball is on top of the key, okay? And there's a line at the on a wing, and then in the opposite, the other line is in the opposite corner. So we got a line in the corner, a line with the ball at the top of the key, and a line at the slot on the opposite side of the corner. All right, follow me so far?
Mm-hmm.
And then we had two coaches underneath the basket with a basketball. So the line in the corner, they did what we would call step in, step out, or a V cut or whatever, but they would pop open, and the line at the top would swing the pass over to the where they would catch it, essentially catch it in the slot. And now we would perform an action. So let's say it's just a simple screen away, what we called a zipper screen. And that player would go screen away. We would say, okay, you're either gonna pop, you're either gonna fade, or you're gonna curl. Let's say that they curl. So the cutter curls and the passer hits them with the pass and they go in and shoot the layup. And now the screener and the passer pop out, and the two coaches underneath hit them with a pass, and now they're shooting the shot. And we're getting three shots up every single time. I really liked it because we could say, okay, now we're going to work. Today we're going to work on ball screens. So you're going to swing it after they step in, step out. You swing it to that side. Now you're going to follow with a ball screen. And when that player comes off the ball screen, now they make a decision. they can, the person that's on the opposite slot, they can crack back to the corner or crack back to the top of the key. They could drive in and shoot the shot themselves. The screener can roll. The screener can pop. And we just worked a lot on our motion principles. And we did that. If we had six practices in a week, we probably did that drill four times. Probably two out of every three practices, we did that for 8 to 10 minutes, just working on movement, moving without the ball, and making different plays and different reads without the ball. So that was one of my favorites.
One that I got from my time out in Harlan, I picked this up from Mitch Osborne out there, but he had like a 12, 13-minute shooting workout, and you'd start off with your wraparound stuff, and then you would go into your like drop step and different things like that. But the thing I really liked at the end of it is he got into four lines with three-point shooting. So you'd have like corner, wing, top of the key, opposite wing. And so for three of those minutes, you would be where you would shoot a three, rebound the ball, rotate to the left, and you're keeping track. And then after 3 minutes, you would yell shift. And so then you would shift the lines to where the other corner was covered and the wing, top of the key, wing. And you were hoping as a group down there, and usually would have like 12 guys or whatever, where you were hoping to be making 20 threes a team about every minute. And so your goal at the end was between 120 and 125 makes. And some nights you would be on fire and you would get into the 130s. And it just, you know, it built a lot of confidence. And I really credit that a lot for us kind of improving our three-point percentage. But that's one that I really liked a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The last two I have are a little bit more form shooting drills, Tony. Got this from Nick Nurse, called it Toronto shooting. This is when he was with the Raptors, so, you know, real genius here. So you have three players at a basket, one on each side, one right in front of the rim. And you just take it, and you take the ball, and you just work on your form shooting, and you got two shots to make it once, okay? So as soon as you make it, you take a step back, and you do, and so now you're 4 or 5 feet away, and now you're up and through, and you got two shots to make it. If you make a shot within two shots, you step back and you're here and you're up and through, and you just keep in, you just keep taking steps backwards as long as you can. And it kind of became a competition. You know, hey, I got 7 steps back. Oh, you know, somebody got 8 steps back today. You know, whatever it may be. About 6 steps put you at the 3-point line. 7 steps was about 24-ish feet. And then, you know, so, you know, if you got to 8 or 9, I mean, you're letting it fly pretty good. But then once you missed, then you would move over. Okay, now I move over to the side of the rim. Let's say you were in front of the rim. Now you move over to one side. You just keep rotating around the rim there. And we would just do that to work on form at times and just have the kids see the ball go through the basket consistently. So that's another one that I really liked.
I'm going to stick with your form one. This is one I was maybe going to throw in at the end, but we call them perfects. And depending upon your players, what we would do is we'd start them about 2 feet away from the basket. We would have them one-hand shoot where they would act like they were giving the ball 5 and then get it to where you got the wrinkles on the wrist, end up on your tiptoes, and just shoot it one hand. And what you had to do, depending upon, you know, the type of shooter that you want, is we would either have them get 3 total perfects where it would swish nothing but net. And once you got your 3, you'd rotate to a different spot. And we usually did the 2 sides and right in the front of the rim. But if you really wanted to become a really good shooter, what we would begin to do with you is you had to get a certain number of perfects in a row. So maybe like 3 perfects in a row or 5 perfects in a row or whatever the case may be. And that really helped with their form early on. And then like you're talking about, then you begin to work your way out a little bit. You can do this, you know, with a coach, with a partner, whatever. And I just think that's a much, much better way for kids to warm up, because most of the time, where do they go? They grab the ball, they hop behind the 3-point line, and they're chucking it up there, and form, you know, can go wherever. It's not good. And this really focuses on, you know, getting to where they're a great shooter, then they can work their way out with those perfects. And guys that would really commit to that, they would see their percentages go up, a big part of it based upon that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Last one I got is kind of a competition / form shooting, confidence builder, whatever. We called it sniper drill. And basically, you tried to make 2 before you missed 2. So you kept shooting, and you either made 2 or you missed 2. If you made 2 in a row, then you yelled out, "Sniper!" And you switched, And, you know, again, you could do it a lot of different ways. A lot of times we did it with like 15-foot catch and shoot shots. Again, just form shooting, confidence, building it up in that way. Other times, you know, okay, you know, again, off the bounce, whatever it may be. But that was another one that our kids really, really liked. We would do that for 3 to 5 minutes. Usually about 4 minutes was kind of the sweet spot with that one. And that was one that was really popular with our players.
One that we did that really helped with free throws is we called it Xavier free throws. If you made it, you gave your team one. If you missed it, you gave the other team two. So you'd start off 70-70 and you'd play to 90.
Okay.
And so you'd have to make 20 free throws before you missed 10. And we would do this with two groups. So we'd have one group on one end going and another group on the other end going. And you could, you know, you, one of the key things there was making sure you got your better free throw shooters scheduled in there first so you could get off to a good start. But that was one that I think our guys really liked. They might not have liked losing and the consequence that came if they lost, but I think they really liked it because it helped them to maybe handle the pressure of free throws in a game a little bit better.
On April 26th, a series of tornadoes hit the Lincoln, Omaha, Southwest Iowa area. 63 tornadoes in all, some believed to be as large as an EF4 or even EF5. Destroying hundreds, if not thousands, of homes and turning people's lives upside down. Folks, if you would like to help out with the efforts here in the Lincoln, Omaha, Southwest Iowa area, I encourage you to go to redcross.org and follow the tabs. Donate if you have the opportunity to do so, any supplies, whatever it may be. Our community is really devastated. We're really lucky. It could have been a lot worse, but whole subdivisions were essentially knocked to the ground. The village of Minden, Iowa, over half the homes were destroyed, and it was a very, very difficult day. So if you would like to help out, please go to redcross.org to help out those who are truly in need. Well, Tony, you know who feels no pressure at all.
When you're the best rock band in the world, that would be Europe.
Second best rock band in the world to Duran Duran, who I'm excited. A week from Friday, Tony, I'll be watching the Duranis here at Steelhouse here in Omaha. Looking forward to it. I'm jacked. I'm excited. So, trivia this week is my turn. Tony, NBA playoffs are in full swing. And perhaps the best individual performer amongst quite a few very good individual performances is Jalen Brunson of the New York Knicks. Second New York Knicks point guard reference tonight after Baron Davis. Jalen Brunson going into tonight's game, and they're down 10 at halftime. We're recording this on Wednesday night. He has scored 40 plus in four straight games. Tony, who was the last player to do this, to score 40 or more in four consecutive playoff games?
If I remember the interview after the game well with him and Josh Hart, I think they pointed out it was his heirness, Michael Jordan.
In what year did that happen, Antoine?
Let's go 1994.
Close.
Ooh.
He didn't play in 1995.
Oh. So let's go 96.
Wrong way.
93.
93, I believe it was. Yeah. I think it was I think it was the Phoenix series and the championship. So
okay.
Yeah. Well done, my friend. Well done.
About time I got one.
Yeah. Well,
and by the way, it says here in the box score he's only played 8 minutes in the first half and has 5 points.
Ooh. Well, this is not what Mel Allen would say.
How about that?
I forgot that last week, so I wanted to make sure I got it in this week. So
you might have needed to go twice. Mel's probably won't take it.
Yeah, it's not what they want to hear. So, yeah, he's only got 5 points right now. Ooh,
that's
yeah.
What it says here. Oh. He's played 8 minutes and has 5 points.
Ah, foul trouble or injury?
He has down zero for his fouls. So I don't know what's going on there.
God, he must have got hurt, I would imagine. So, so Tony, we are knee-deep in the NBA playoffs. Nothing really per se that I wanted to lead with here. I'll let you kind of get the discussion started. It's been something.
It has been something. You know, if you're basing it off of right now, I would put a good sum of money that the NBA champions are going to reside to the north of Iowa in the great state of Minnesota, because they look really, really good right now. How in the world do you handle the Nuggets on their home floor in game two without the four-time defensive player of the year?
They swallowed them up and spit them out. And I was watching the game as it was happening, and I was just stunned. I mean, just absolutely stunned. Their length, Nikhil Alexander Walker's arms are just, they just keep going and going and going. And then you got McDaniels. And, of course, everybody's engaged because it's the playoffs. But they just look really, really good. The two big lineup, harkening back to 1984 and, you know, McHale and Parrish, you know, playing two bigs at the same time. Now, the difference is, two of those three bigs can really, really shoot the three-point shot for Minnesota. So you can get away with playing the two bigs when they can both shoot it as well as they are right now. But, oh, I mean, they look so good. It is, and it's not like Denver has stunk coming into this, but they have just absolutely manhandled them. And I know the competition isn't the same, but Boston, now that I say this, they'll drop game two by 15 because that's what Boston does. But it just seems like it's an inevitable collision course between Minnesota and Boston right now. But don't count out Oklahoma City. I watched them play for about a quarter and a half last night. And they're really good, but I think Minnesota has just taken it to another level.
Yeah, and one of the things I probably was taking for granted would be the regular season record. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't give Oklahoma City the respect they deserve, and you know, obviously Luka's a little bit compromised right now with his injuries and stuff, but I wouldn't take anything away from Oklahoma City. And here's the thing I would give you with Oklahoma City and Minnesota: those are the two best defensive teams in the West.
Yeah.
And that's the key thing that's separating them. And then Derek White is on a heater right now. Oh, holy cow, is wow. He playing well. You know, in Boston, when they get Porzingis back, it's going to make them even tougher. It's going to be, you know, the Western Conference Finals, I think, are going to be really good. Eastern Conference, I'm not as confident it's going to be really good, because I just think Boston's head and shoulders above everybody in the East. The big other thing I would throw at you right now in the NBA playoffs would be the officiating. If you go back to the end of the Knicks-Pacers game the other night,
oh, geez.
A lot of controversy there. And then if you go in and take a look at Jamal Murray and Mike Malone's behavior in the game two of the Minnesota series the other night, them not getting a technical and perhaps even getting ejected, that came under some consternation there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike Malone, like, he was Earl Weaver mode. Coming
yes.
out of that, and I don't blame him. It was a horrendous no call on Towns going into Jamal Murray. Now, would it have mattered at the end of the game? No, because Minnesota was going to win no matter what. I think it was, you know, frustration boiling over there. But yeah, you know, Jamal Murray should have been suspended for doing that. He got $100,000 fine. He avoided a suspension. And part of that is the officiating changed about halfway through the year. And, you know, Minnesota, you can definitely say Minnesota has definitely benefited from that. A little bit more hand check, a little bit more physicality that you're able to get away with on the ball. And with their length, you know, Karl Anthony Towns maybe is getting one less dumb foul a game, which keeps him in the game longer. McDaniels becomes that much more effective. You know, again, Nikhil Alexander, Walker coming in off the bench, doing what he's doing. You know, so it's a kind of a little bit of a perfect storm. The Timberwolves are on a real heater right now. Now it's going to be difficult for them to sustain this for a long period of time. You're probably not going to go through the whole way playing this well. You don't want to be a victim of the moment, so to speak, Tony, and get too far into it. But boy, it just looks like the thing was that they made Denver look like they had just no answer. Like it looked like the varsity beating up on the JV in a practice is what that first half looked like the other night.
Yes. And, you know, they look really, really good. And I don't know. I mean, I think Boston could take games from them, but I don't know anybody right now that I would say could beat Denver in a 7-game series. Minnesota. And yeah. I don't know if I would have said that a week or so ago.
Well, that's the Timberwolves. They've won two playoff series in their career, in the history of the franchise, and they were both the same season. So yeah. You know, most people just kind of look at that with, it's the Timberwolves, and I still think Boston can beat them. I really do, because I think Boston is just as long, just as athletic, just as deep, but they have even more offensive weapons than does Minnesota. We'll see. If that's the finals, I think it's a heck of a matchup. But I think that's the collision course that we're headed on. And it doesn't take any basketball geniuses to really... gutsy call there, you know, so...
Yeah. Denver's defense Minnesota's defense is the separator.
Yeah.
I mean, what they did to Jamal Murray the other night, I don't know of many guards that could deal with what he had to go through.
No,
and he lost it too.
Yeah. Yeah. He, you know, and he's, I think part of it is he's frustrated with his injury and he probably can't do everything that he would like to do. But even then, I don't think it would matter. I don't think it would matter. I mean, they have just elevated their play to just a tremendous level. And again, I know I don't want to shortchange Oklahoma City. I don't want to shortchange Dallas. Now, Luka is kind of playing on 1.5 legs right now, it looks like. But they're deep, they're long, they're athletic. It's shaping up to be a good run here, Tony. So,
mm-hmm.
Coaches, do you want to look good? Stupid question. Of course you want to look good. We all want to look good. You know what's the best way to look good? Buying yourself some A Pen and a Napkin merchandise. We've got some really, really good looking stuff here. We've got t-shirts and sweatshirts, and you are not going to regret picking that up. T-shirts are $22 a piece. Sweatshirts are $30 a piece. If I need to mail it to you, it's just $5 shipping and handling to get this good looking stuff out to you. Coaches, I appreciate all that you've done for me over the last 3 years or so with A Pen and a Napkin. I hope I've been able to help you out. Might as well come out and help out the Twitter handle and the podcast by ordering some A Pen and a Napkin merchandise. And like I said, you get to look good. If you're interested in ordering, you can DM me on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin, send me a direct message, or you can email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com, and I'll get you those ordering details so that you can order some A Pen and a Napkin merchandise.
Let's talk, Tony. I threw it out to you here to talk a little WNBA preview. We've had a couple of preseason games. And we are starting for sure, I believe it's on the 14th. So by the time we get to next Friday's coaching staff, the regular season will have begun. And so, yeah, let's kind of throw our hats in the ring here, Tony, and see what we got. You want to start with the East or the West?
Let's go west.
Okay. You want to go 6-1?
Sure. Okay. I had it lined up 1-6, but we can go 6-1.
Okay. Well, we just reverse the order. I mean, we can go 1-6.
We're good. We're good.
Okay. All right. I had Seattle in sixth place, and as I looked at this, there's not a bad team right now. I think the talent is pretty evenly distributed. I think obviously some teams are better than others, but I think the time is ripe for expansion. I think there's a lot of players that would the level of play would not take a massive dip once they start expanding into the new places that they're planning on going into. So that just my opinion. But I had Seattle sixth, Tony.
I'm wondering if you picked up on their off-season acquisitions. They got some nice acquisitions. I don't even have Seattle sniffing six. I think it's the LA Sparks.
Okay. I had the Sparks fifth. Had the Sparks fifth. I know they got Skylar Diggins was acquired, right? Was it Skylar or?
Yeah. Skylar Diggins is going to Seattle. And then the other one that's also in Seattle that I thought was a big pickup was Nneka Ogumike.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you plug those two around Jewel Lloyd and then Magbegor, I'm probably butchering that anyway. I thought she had a really good year last year. And I think they also get back, Mercedes Russell is going to continue to develop. So I would have Seattle quite a bit higher than six.
Okay.
My five after LA, and I think LA is a distant six, to be honest with you. I think they're by far the worst team in the West. I would go Minnesota at five.
Okay. See, I had the Sparks at five, and I had Minnesota at four. So I just felt like, I lost my train of thought here. I can't find it. I think it's going to be, Cameron Brink, I think is going to come in and do some nice things for the Sparks. You talked me into it, Tony. Yeah, I probably screwed that up. I probably should have had the Sparks sixth and the Seattle fifth. Minnesota, I just think they have a little bit more here. I'm trying to find their roster here. It's been a couple of days since I've done this, so I need to refresh my memory. So
Collier and McBride, I think, are really nice players, but I see maybe more so McBride than Collier getting a little bit long in the tooth.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Minnesota will be as good as what they were a year ago.
Yeah. I agree with you in that regard. Who's the gal that they got? I'm losing my complete train of thought right now, Tony. Now you're talking me into it. Maybe I did screw that up. I don't know what I was thinking. Ah. That's why you're smart and I'm dumb. You're good looking. I'm not so good looking.
Yeah, there you go.
So, how about third? I had Phoenix third.
Did I get my four in yet? Because I think my four is Phoenix.
Okay. All right. I think I put them up there because I think, Griner, I mean, everything that was around that situation, and rightfully so, it was just a... is just chaos and difficult, and she's just trying to get her life back from what she went through in Russia. I think Taurasi is Taurasi, and until she, it's kind of like LeBron, until she really breaks down and shows she can't do it, you still kind of got to believe that she's going to do it, even though Father Time is going to beat her at some point. But Griner is only 33, and I just think that I think they've got a little bit of a bounce back. I think that's a pretty proud franchise, and I don't think Taurasi and Griner want to go out in the manner that they played with last year, which was a really, really disappointing season for them.
I think the wheels are off, and they're in need of a rebuild. I'll be honest, I had a hard time putting them ahead of Minnesota. And I could probably be talked into flipping them around, but I just see – I think – Father Time, Taurasi's going to, I think you're going to see a pretty significant dip with her. I do like a couple pieces that the Phoenix picked up. They ended up getting a couple players that have won WNBA championships. They got Natasha Cloud, who was with the Mystics, and then they got Kalia Cooper, who had been with the Chicago franchise. And so I like both of those. I just think they're in a tough spot, you know, having fired their coach from a year ago.
Yep.
I just think they're a franchise that's kind of lost their way. And I'll be honest, I would blow it up and trade some stuff and try to start over at some point. Cause I think they're continuing to grasp at straws for something that's not going to come back.
Mm-hmm. So you had Seattle at 3 then, Tony?
I actually had Dallas at 3.
You had Dallas at 3. And so you had Seattle all the way up at 2?
Yes, I have Seattle at 2. I think Jewel Lloyd, if she's not the MVP, she's one of the 3 or 4 best players of the WNBA. And then I think Skylar Diggins, with having taken the year off, I think she's going to be fresh this season. Mm-hmm. I think NECA, with getting out of L.A., is going to be have something to prove. And I really, really like their center. Like I said, that Magda Gore, I just think she's just keeps getting better and better. A lot of raw potential that's starting mm-hmm. to see that potential come into be. And so I have Seattle up all the way to 2.
Yep. Yeah, I had Dallas there. You know, just Erika Agunmawali, tough name. She's so good. Mm-hmm. She is so good, and she's really hitting her prime right now. I think all of these teams are a distant 2 through 6 from Seattle or from Las Vegas.
Yes.
It's kind of a race for second with all of them. And, you know, Las Vegas kind of has a little bit of that vibe of what we saw at the beginning of the WNBA with the Houston
Comets.
Yeah. They could go on, because I'm looking at their roster right now. You know, Chelsea Gray is only 31. Kelsey Plum is 29. Asia Wilson's only 27. Jackie Young is 26. I mean, they are not going anywhere anytime soon. Now, again, they have to stay healthy like they did for the most part last year. Now they lost Candace Parker to injury last year, and they were able to negotiate that. Can they get some younger players like a Megan Gustafson from Iowa or Kia Stokes? And Kia Stokes was a key player last year for them, too.
Yes.
She stepped in and played well. You know, those top four, as long as those top four stay healthy, they've just got to find 3 other players for playoff time to just hold the fort down, and they're going to be awfully tough to beat in the end.
I would agree. And, you know, you were kind of talking about 2 through 5. I wouldn't necessarily say you could shuffle the deck and it could be whatever order, but it could be with 2 through 5. I think there's a big gap between 1 and 2. And I think there's a big gap between 5 and 6. But
go ahead.
But those other 4, I think, are pretty competitive with one another. The only thing that I would have had Dallas a little bit higher, to be honest with you, I probably would have put them ahead of Seattle. But Satu Sabally, and I'm probably butchering the name and I apologize, she's going to miss probably at least the first half of the season with a shoulder injury. And she was the most improved player in the league last year. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's going to be tough for them to overcome her absence there. But yeah, I would say 2 through 5, fairly interchangeable. 1 and 6, those there's gaps there.
Mm-hmm. Let's go in the Eastern Conference here. Who you got at the bottom, Tony?
I would say the Chicago Sky. You know, we kind of talked about this a little bit with Phoenix and how I think Phoenix needs to kind of blow it up and reboot it, if you will. The Sky did that. They blew it up and are rebooting it. And so when you go through and take a look, they had a really good draft. They brought in Angel Reese. I probably would have been a little bit higher with them, but Cardoso is out for, I believe, 4 to 6 weeks with a shoulder injury.
Oh, I did not see that.
Yeah, and you're counting on a couple disgruntled players that have had kind of a lost their way a little bit. You're counting on Diamond DeShields, and you're counting on Kennedy Carter. And they just don't have the track record, if you will, of being able to be counted on. And so I really put them down in that 6th spot.
Yep, I had them at 6 as well. A lot of the same reasons. You know, they did have a really good draft. They drafted a foundation of rim protection and rebounding, and that's a way that you can improve quickly. But I had them at six as well, Tony. They've got a ways to go before they're ready to really run with the big dogs. Go ahead, buddy.
No, I was just going to say, if Cardoso was healthy, I might have put them at five, because I think the Mystics stink too. The big thing with the Mystics that are holding them back, number one, Elena Deladon is sitting out the year. And number two, Natasha Cloud is in Phoenix now. And so when you lose what are arguably your two best players, that's obviously a kick in the gut. They had a decent draft. They got Aaliyah Edwards out of UConn. I think she'll go in and help them in the post area. And you've got some proud veterans that not that long ago won a WNBA title. Mm-hmm. But I just, I mean, if Elena Deladon was playing, I might have them a little bit higher.
Yep.
But no, I think they're towards the bottom of the league too.
Yep. So we agree with them there. At four, I had Indiana at four.
Me too. You know, the draft was really good. You've got Caitlin Clark. You're going to put her around some nice players with Aaliyah Boston is going to be a future MVP in this league. Melissa Smith was the number two selection from a couple drafts ago.
Yep.
Kelsey Mitchell is a really good player. Erica Wheeler's a good veteran. And so I think the Fever are headed in the right direction.
Yep. Yeah, they've got some nice pieces. Now they just need to grow together.
Yes.
They've done what, like, an Oklahoma City has done in the NBA, where, okay, we've gotten these high draft picks. We need to hit on them. And for the most part, they have. Now, again, it's, you know, got to see what Caitlin does, which is a huge piece to the puzzle. But they're just young. I think 3 years from now, we could be talking about them being towards the top of the conference. And being, in theory, if they stick together with Boston, with Caitlin Clark, with Kelsey Mitchell, and some of the other ancillary pieces, you know, in 3 or 4 years, are they the team that kind of takes the baton from Las Vegas as Kelsey, Plum, and that crew start to age out a little bit, if you will? That's probably the best case scenario for Indiana in that regard. So I had them at four. I had Atlanta at three, Tony.
Same with me. Atlanta, I would actually have flipped them in Indiana. I think Indiana has more potential and a brighter future than Atlanta.
Yep, agreed.
But like you said, Indiana's got to grow together. Atlanta has some decent pieces. You know, mm-hmm. Ryan Howard is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then they brought in Jordan Canada, who I think is an underrated point guard.
Yep.
She won two WNBA titles when she was with the Storm, and I really like that pickup for them.
Yep.
And so just because they've been together a little bit longer, I'm going to put them ahead. But it would not surprise me if Indiana, by the end of the season, is the better of the two franchises.
They may not have the better record, but they might be playing better ball at the end of the season than Atlanta. Yes. Yep. Who'd you have it to, Tony?
Connecticut.
Yep.
I just don't – I like the fact that they're getting – Brianna Jones back. I really think that's good. Bonner seems to just always, you know, you talk about Tarazi and beating Father Time. Nuwana Bonner is another one. 15
yep.
at WNBA seasons.
Yep.
Alyssa Thomas, man, you talk about a stat sheet stuffer, rebounds, assists, points. I mean, she's almost a walking triple double, and she's arguably the third best player in the league,
mm-hmm.
Behind Brianna Stewart and Asia Wilson. And then Dejanay Carrington had a really good year last year and stepped up and was somebody that they could count on off the bench. And then they've added a couple other nice pieces. They're close, Marty, to being better than New York, but I'm not quite ready to give them that nod.
And to me, the biggest difference between the two teams is just New York has just more offensive firepower than Connecticut does. And obviously you have either the best player or the second best player, depending on the season, with Stewie. You've got Sabrina Ionescu. Now, the one thing I did kind of worry about with New York is Courtney Vandersloot. You know, she's 35. You know, like you said, or like we talked about, you know, and she obviously, like any great athlete, she obviously taking great care of her body to still play as well as she does at the age that she's at. But that was the only thing that I was like, you know, that might be a little something. Everybody else is in really kind of the prime of their career. Jonquel Jones is only 30. You know, Stewie is 29. So I think we're probably looking at if everything plays out the way we think it will, it probably looking at a rematch between New York and Las Vegas in the finals. But again, health and all those other things have to play into it. But I think we're in agreement, and I think we went 6-for-6 in the East.
Yes.
That we agreed on everything there. I would say it's going to be a rematch of the finals for next year. And then health is just going to play a lot into it, you know. And which team is going to be healthier at the end of the year? I think that's the one that's going to hoist the trophy.
I would agree. And, you know, the thing that I'm excited about is, like, you take a look at professional sports, and when a draft comes along and it has the impact, like I think back to 1983, Marino, Elway, you know, the quarterback class and how that really kind of put the NFL on its path of popularity and just at an all-time high right now. You go through and you take a look at other professional sports. I think this draft in the WNBA this season, with, you know, what they brought in with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, and then the star power that's there, you know, Camila Cardoso and so on and so forth, Cameron Brink, I just really think that this league is going to take off in popularity. And so I'm really excited to see the rookie impact. And I think this could be one of, if not the best season in the WNBA's history.
Yep. Tony, episode 85, anything else on shooting and shooting fundamentals?
Here's the thing I would give you with shooting, Marty. What does everybody want to look at the end of the game? How many points do I have?
Yep.
And when you take a look at it, obviously you score points by making shots. And it's one of those things where, you know, as far as shooting goes, yeah, you can probably shoot too much in practice, but if there's one thing I would err on in practice, it would be shooting too much.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know as a younger coach, it was a lot of defense. And then I started to figure out, hey, if we can't put the ball in the basket consistently, we could play all the defense in the world, but we're probably not going to get to where we wanted to go, because we are going to have to make some plays offensively. We're going to have to hit some shots. And you can draw up the best plays in the world. You can do this. You can go on all these different places like a pen and a napkin and pick up plays and do this. But if your kids aren't making shots, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. So keep them shooting. You know, I've talked about this before. We wanted to have our kids shoot 250 shots a day in practice on average. That was a regular season practice. If we were in there for 2 hours, now again, if you're only going for an hour 15 and it's the day before a game and it's a scout, yeah, that's going to be a different number. But we wanted to have that ratio. Maybe it's not 250, but, you know, let's say average 125 shots an hour. So we wanted to still get those kids 125 to 150 shots from the time they got into the gym in a shorter practice, let's say. So I agree with you, Tony. Shoot, and shoot it some more. That's what you got to be able to do. So episode 85, Tony and I, fundamentals of shooting and shooting drills. Hope you liked it. We may have set a record here. This might have been our longest podcast ever, Tony, for the coaching staff. We're chewing up an hour 15 at this point, and we actually didn't really do anything really stupid. So,
no.
God, that's...
Write that down.
Yes.
You know, a lot of podcasts at number 85, they might be getting shorter and mailing it in.
But
we're
not us.
Giving out pretty good effort here.
Not us. We're still bringing it. 85 episodes into it, and we're still bringing it. So, let me tell you one thing, brother. You know, say your prayers, eat your vitamins. Pretty soon, someday, you two can have 24-inch pythons. So...
Or at least do 85 podcasts.
Yeah, or 85 podcasts. So, oh, hey, let's get out of here before we do anything really dumb. For Tony DeVis, I am Marty Plum. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day